I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum.
And
what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Thursday, September 1st, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. I think it's eerily foreboding, if that's not redundant, that September 11 is on a Sunday this year. So that should be interesting. I don't want to predict bad things, but you know, this again, this is now we're into 21 years later after September 11, 2001. We now are at a point where people born on that day have turned 21 years of age. So, you know, let's call it a generation and so we have an entire generation now that's grown up in the lie, and now they've been subjected to another lie over the last couple of years, another big lie, big lie. And so what does that sort of portend for their lives, for them and their posterity? I think we're starting to see, you know, I've been talking about Generation X, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. What comes after Z? Oh yeah, nothing. So I think there's a reason that the sophists and intriguers decided to label these generations Gen X, Gen Y, and Gen Z. And we can see environmental forces of all types conspiring or being brought, being sort of weaponized against people. Conspiring against folks. So here we are. And from there, how about we start with a word of encouragement? I appreciated yesterday's entry in Oswald Chambers' My Utmost for His Highest. I think we could all use a word of encouragement. If you maybe relate to this or you grasp the concept, then you undoubtedly understand what was going on in the boat when Jesus was sleeping and everybody else was freaking out. This sort of reminds me of that. So this is yesterday, August 31st, entry in Oswald Chambers' My Utmost for His Highest. He writes, "My joy, your joy." And that my joy might remain in you and that your joy might be full. He cites John 15:11. So continuing, he writes, what was the joy that Jesus had? It is an insult to use the word happiness in connection with Jesus Christ. This is interesting because a lot of people would not comprehend that. The joy of Jesus was the absolute self-surrender and self-sacrifice of himself to his Father, the joy of doing that which the Father sent him to do. I delight to do thy will. That's Psalm 40, verse 8, I believe. Jesus prayed that our joy might go on fulfilling itself until it was the same joy as his. Have I allowed Jesus Christ to introduce his joy to me? The full flood of my life is not in bodily health, not in external happenings, not in seeing God's work succeed, but in the perfect understanding of God and in the communion with him that Jesus himself had. The first thing that will hinder this joy is the captious irritation of thinking out circumstances. And who doesn't experience that today? We'll come back to that in a minute. The cares of this world, Jesus said, will choke God's word. Before we know where we are, in other words, before you know it, we are caught up in the shows of things. Maybe that happens intentionally. We have so many bread and circuses around these days. All that God has done for us is the mere threshold. He wants to get us to the place where we will be his witnesses and proclaim who Jesus is. Be rightly related to God. Find your joy there, and out of you will flow rivers of living water. Be a center for Jesus Christ to pour living water through, or an empty vessel, as it were, maybe, or a willing vessel. Stop being self-conscious. Stop being a sanctified prig, and live the life hid with Christ. The life that is rightly related to God is as natural as breathing wherever it goes. The lives that have been of most blessing to you are those who are unconscious of it. How provocative. How insightful. So, a couple of things. The first thing that will hinder this joy is the captious irritation of thinking out circumstances. Joy, obviously, is separate and distinct from happiness. And I'll just leave that there. We'll consider that sufficient explanation. But joy is a magnificent thing. Happiness is sort of circumstantial and temporal. Joy is not. Obviously, you might say in terms of water, happiness can be the water on the surface. Joy is the water beneath, you know, the down near the riverbed or whatever. Captious is an interesting word marked by a disposition to find and point out trivial faults intended to entrap or confuse, as in an argument, apt to notice and make much of unimportant faults or defects, disposed to find fault or raise objections, prone to cavil, difficult to please, fault-finding, touchy, etc., etc. Variety of definitions there. And according to Webster, if we go to Webster, Noah Webster, disposed to find fault or raise objections, fitted to catch or ensnare, insidious, proceeding from caviling disposition. So, the first thing that will hinder this joy is the captious irritation of thinking out circumstances. And who doesn't experience that today? And then he says, stop being self-conscious. This is, to me, this is the marked distinction between the world today, particularly, and what is supposed to be the Christian life. And obviously there are hints, if it's not directly spoken to, in fact, in the New Testament in particular, Paul's warning to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3, and what is referred to sometimes as the peril of apostasy. And there are a number of folks, you know, Spencer Smith and some of these other channels are pointing out the apostasy of the day, which sort of calls to mind what Jesus said in Matthew 24, for example, but 2 Timothy 3, but realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of, first and foremost, self. Lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure, so hedonistic, rather than lovers of God. This is, I mean, we have been groomed on this. That's the Marxist bent. That's the cultural Marxist bent. That's exactly, you know, the Nietzschean, Jungian, Derridian, Foucaultian philosophy. This is what we've been, this is what kids are learning at university, right? All of these folks, the godless, morbidly self-obsessed, you know, whether it's Kafka or Joyce or, you know, Jung or Nietzsche or Foucault or Derrida or all of these scholarly intellectuals, so-called, who actually seem to all be on the slippery slide of Romans 1 and 1 Corinthians 1. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Morbidly self-obsessed. So the point is, as Oswald Chambers says, stop being self-conscious. The lives that have been most blessing to you, the lives that have been of most blessing to you and I, are those who are unconscious of it. And how marvelous that is when you stop and think about it. It's really a marvelous thing. They were not morbidly self-obsessed and they were not self-conscious. They were unconscious of the blessing that they were imparting, probably because they were in many, if not most or even all cases, they were this willing vessel that Oswald Chambers is describing. So that's pretty marvelous, I would say. Beyond that, the works of the flesh or the deeds of the flesh versus the fruit of the Spirit in the NASB, I mean, this is sort of the same kind of contrast. Now, the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness. It's not alcoholism. It's not a disease. It's drunkenness. It's a sinful deed of the flesh. Carousing and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit, the singular fruit of the Spirit, capital S, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there is no law. Amazing. A question that I think sort of coincides with all of this that I intend to return to. I was asked the question recently, what does it mean to be a God-fearing man? And I think it's ironic because of with all of the pointing out of the insanity around us and with all of the gender dysphoria and all of the defense of that, you know, Matt Walsh doing what is a woman and all of this kind of stuff. What does it mean to be a God-fearing man? I said I would like to pray about that and give a more thoughtful response, but my initial response was David. I think there's a reason that David is referred to as a man after God's own heart. And the fear is not a, I'm terrified that I might be killed. It's a reverence. That's the way I understand the word. Maybe for help, we go to Noah Webster. A few definitions of fear: a painful emotion or passion excited by an expectation of evil. That's very articulate. Or the apprehension of impending danger. The force of this passion, beginning with the most moderate degree, may be thus expressed: fear, dread, terror, fright. Fear is accompanied with a desire to avoid or ward off the expected evil. Fear is the passion of our nature, which excites us to provide for our security on the approach of evil. Number two, anxiety, solicitude. The principal fear was the holy temple. Three, the cause of fear, that angels become a fear. Four, the object of fear. And Genesis 31:42, he cites, except the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me. Also, Isaiah 24:17 and Jeremiah 48:43. Something set or hung up to terrify wild animals by its color or noise. In Scripture, number six, fear is used to express a filial or slavish passion. In God, in good men, the fear of God is a holy awe or reverence of God and His laws, which springs from a just view and real love of the divine character, leading the subjects of it to hate and shun everything that can offend such a holy being, and inclining them to aim at perfect obedience. This is filial fear. So there you go. Definition seven is the worship of God, citing Psalm 34:7. Noah Webster's definition number seven, the worship of God. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Definition eight, the law and word of God. Nine, reverence, respect, due regard, and so on. That, I would say, is what we're talking about. So, essentially, definitions 6 through 9 of the noun fear. So, David, I would say, had this in abundance, and every time he sinned, and there were no shortage of occasions, the Bible recounts. Every time, though, he repents and returns immediately to God. You know, when he is confronted, for example, by Samuel about the census or the Bathsheba incident, you know, Psalm 51 is the essentially the testimony of David's repentance, which is, I would say, pretty bold. So for a guy who was chosen by God specifically, you know, through Samuel, to be so humble and so have such a penitent heart, if anyone could boast, I think, on earth in themselves, so to speak, but not really, you know, if anyone could say, I mean, look how fantastic I am, somebody like David. And I don't think, I'm not aware that he ever did. And he was always pursuing God's heart. So again, man after God's own heart. I would say that's the, to me, that's the epitome of a God-fearing man. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This, as I have said many times recently, this is not intended to be a Sunday morning kind of thing. It just sort of works out that way. I think we could all use some encouragement. This sounds encouraging to me. Maybe it's just me. So here's another fun thing. Let's see. Somebody posted on social media, I saw the other day, U.S. government sues Idaho data company. U.S. government sues, this was an NBC News article. U.S. government sues Idaho data company. It says tracks people at abortion clinics. It's always, isn't it interesting how everything's skewed these days? Skewed. Has to be twisted a little bit. So the suit appeared to be the first of its kind filed by the Federal Trade Commission since the Supreme Court's ruling in June overturning Roe v. Wade. So this sort of touches on what we were talking about yesterday. I'm going to get into this more. I think we'll play a bunch of a flurry of sound bites, including guys like Harari et al. Saying the craziest things. You know, we got into the John in Tennessee and Mike in Kentucky mentioned the Argus IS system yesterday, DARPA's grand high-resolution surveillance platform. It was 10 years ago when we heard about it. We heard about the 1.8 gigapixel version. That was 10 years ago. So I think of the Disrupt conference around the same time, I think it was about 2015 actually, where guys were talking about drones everywhere in the sky. We've seen the legislation for that kind of stuff in recent years. Drones everywhere in the sky. So it was everywhere in the sky. So put together like drones everywhere. And, you know, we've heard that Amazon wants to have a mothership in the sky and deliver everything from the mothership with drones. We've been sort of conditioned to think that's going to be normal. Well, imagine those drones with the Argus IS system. And if you're not familiar, I mean, there's commercial grade stuff out in the marketplace that you can look at that's significantly greater resolution now. I think maybe 15 gigapixel or something like that. And you can see some of the commercial stuff. You look at like a town, picture of a town from miles away, and it looks like something that fits on a postage stamp. And then you can zoom in and see, you know, you can read somebody's watch, for example, in the picture. Crazy stuff. So imagine drones everywhere with that kind of capability. You put that together with what George Friedman said, Brain Bar Budapest. You know, this is and that gets back to the article by John Whitehead, The American Kleptocracy, Government of Liars, Thieves, and Lawbreakers. And it's just astonishing to watch as people deny reality and history. Reality is these things always go a bad direction. That was why, you know, we have the language that I guess we just completely sanitized from our brains as Americans. You know, the language that we have in the American founding, in our founding documents, in the conversations, in the, you know, constitutional conventions, in the Federalist Papers, and all of the conversation centered around the established fact of history that, you know, governments in time, as Jefferson put it, descend into a tyranny. That's just an established fact of history. If someone can find evidence of something to the contrary, it would be some kind of miraculous archaeological expedition through history, because there is no such thing. But we are getting sucked into the Stockholm syndrome meets victim psychopathy that has us believing that our kidnapper is, you know, our savior. It's insane. Stick around. I'll be right back.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Primary season is coming to an end. I'm Peter Serafied with today's Liberty Minute. With primary elections nearly over and the general election fast approaching, I want to reiterate a flaw in the entire election process. Why are there any laws about primaries? The primary election is how political parties choose what candidates to place on the ballot. Political parties are private organizations. They should make their own rules. For example, if a party wants to allow independent voters to vote in their primary, it should be the party's decision, not the state government's. There are five nationally recognized political parties, but the Democrats and Republicans have been in power for so long, they have made laws specifically designed to protect their power. These private, supposedly nonprofit organizations must be afraid of open and fair competition. Find more commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is, Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. upon me.
So this article, we need to play some of these clips. We'll do that. Bottom of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Thursday, September 1st, 2022. A lot of weird things happening. I think I'll just go through that rapid fire here in a minute. So in this article, you know, the Post, smart guy, Russell says he has this thing he does every time Idaho is in the news. So Kachava programmers, current and former, might be on my friends list. At a pitch fest a few years ago, the Kachava presentation made an impact. As investors, bankers, and other entrepreneurs realized what the phone was tracking, people became visibly uncomfortable. Well, good, I think. And yet this, you know, again, maybe we should play, I think we should play George Friedman after this. And then probably Harari after that. This lawsuit is ridiculous, Russell writes, on its face, however. Pretending that tracking location data is somehow different depending on where you are is big stupid. Reminds me of the Strava oopsie a few years back, where secret military locations were exposed by troops patrolling the wall counting their steps. Good job, Brian Cox, for seeking better laws. My comment included, it's sort of not directly applicable, but I would say related because of the nature of the discussion. You know, the point that I'm, well, my comment was, let's also not forget that so-called digital anonymity, PII, etc., is a stubbornly persistent proven myth, and surveillance capitalism is also very real. So my question is, qui bono? And, of course, I include a link to Paul Ohm's Broken Promises of Privacy, responding to the surprising failure of anonymization, which was published back in 2009. And yet we still haven't learned the lesson that he tried to teach us. This mistake, you know, that this myth of anonymization, which is, as he put it, scientists have demonstrated they can often re-identify or de-anonymize individuals hidden in anonymized data with astonishing ease. By understanding this research, we will realize we have made a mistake, labored beneath a fundamental misunderstanding which has assured us much less privacy than we assumed. This mistake pervades nearly every information privacy law, regulation, and debate. Yet regulators and legal scholars have paid it scant attention. We must respond to the surprising failure of anonymization. And this article provides the tools to do so. I say this, I would say at least weekly, sometimes daily, sometimes more, in just my daily going through life. And it just falls on deaf ears. Oh my goodness. I get the, like I said, on a broadcast recently, you know, sir, you're preventing me from doing my job. I really don't appreciate the insinuation that somehow I'm engaged in some mild form of terrorism simply because I ask a question. Where does that go? Why is that necessary? It's really, to me, it's very insidious that you would insinuate somehow I'm preventing you from doing your job for asking a question. What are you so afraid of? That a simple question basically causes the whole machine to break down. Where does this information go? Why is that necessary? What is the purpose of gathering that information? Here, can we write it down on a piece of paper? Why does it have to be typed into a screen somewhere? Just write it down then. If you absolutely have to have it, just write it down. And then when our contractual arrangement is over, burn it. Why does it need to go into some centralized data repository? Well, it's not that big of a deal. Well, if it is, if you understand what's going on here that Paul Ohm is describing, combining databases, deleting personally identifiable information like names and social security numbers, etc., is it's a myth that you're anonymizing data. So when I see this story, and you know, the idea is that, you know, we can somehow sanitize, sure, but you know, by combining databases, which is standard operating procedure these days, which is why I mention in conjunction with all of this things like Neo4j, and as you know, Exhibit A, there's the Panama Papers and that whole discussion that I've mentioned usually in conjunction with this every time. Back in 2016, Neo4j co-founder Emil Ephraim wrote the article, The Panama Papers, Why It Couldn't Have Happened 10 Years Ago. Because this technology and this capability was not what it is. Well, that was in 2016, and now it's even greater 6 years later. But as he pointed out, at 2.6 terabytes and 11.5 million documents, from a size perspective, the Panama Papers dwarf every data leak that's dominated headlines in the last decade. Or ever, as he said. And there's no way to sift through that effectively. It would take, you know, a team of 100 people a lifetime to sift through that much data. But guess what? With Neo4j, they did it with astonishing ease. And this is the power of the graph technology and graph database architecture. So we've had that discussion a few times. This is, you know, and this is all military-grade technology. Is there a global war coming? Yes, it's time for that now. We'll hear George Friedman snicker with glee as he talks about it back in 2017. Is there a global war coming? George Friedman at Brain Bar. So, let me drop that in the slot over here. You've heard it for posterity's sake. We'll play it. And Harari, some of the just the outlandish things that he's said recently. The Stalins of the future will be able to, you know, we couldn't peer into your physiology and identify who the conscientious objectors were who were smiling and clapping for Stalin and Hitler and so on. But we will be able to in the future. You know, that's what Profusa is up to. That's what, you know, the Dexcom G6 and all of that is a gateway to doing that. And this was all foreshadowed. How do you know? We'll get to that. So, George Friedman, is there a global war coming? Go ahead, please.
Hi. Is a global war coming? Of course. There's never been a century that didn't have a global war. The 20th century, you know about 19th centuries and the Napoleonic Wars. 18th century was the Seven Years' War. We can go back and back and back and back. But if you don't think there's a global war coming, then you're saying that the 21st century is going to be the first century in which there isn't a global war. And I will bet against you any amount you want. In fact, global war, all war is sitting with you right now. It's sitting in your pocket. I present to you the iPhone. You've seen this. It carries such superb tools on it as YouTube and Tinder and all the essentials. And you guys are so cool that you know that this represents the future and makes you completely different because, well, you're cool. Let's talk about it. The foundation of this phone is a microchip. The microchip was developed to guide U.S. intercontinental ballistic missiles against Soviet targets. It had to have a small computer in it. It had to be very light. It had to be very accurate. And the microchip was the solution. And all of the weapons that we used during the Cold War to threaten the annihilation of humanity was built on the microchip. And you now use it today. Because it's cool. But that's what it is. Take a look at the other thing. You have a camera in your phone, the digital camera. That was developed by the U.S. National Reconnaissance Office for spy satellites. Problem we had was that if you took regular pictures with film, how do you get them to Earth? So you had to have a way to take pictures of targets of various sorts that didn't require you to drop a Kodak film pack down to the Earth, because that's what they did at the beginning. And they had to develop some sort of way to take pictures that could get back to Earth fast, just the way you send selfies to your mother or something. And that was the digital camera. It was driven by something called the CCD, which I remember the name once, but I can't remember what it's about. And what it did was it took digital pictures that could be beamed back to Earth to target people. Your innocent little camera had its birth in spy satellites. There's GPS. You love it. You walk around the street looking at it instead of the traffic. You get killed. It's a cool device. GPS was invented by the United States Air Force. It was called NavStar, to guide cruise missiles to their targets and to allow Army units precision in their land navigation. In other words, it was invented to let soldiers know where they were. Okay? And it's the most dangerous thing you have in your device, because if you don't get hit by a car, you're going to crash yours while you're staring at it. So it has a violent nature built in. Now, all of this is designed to get to the place where all humanity lives, which is the internet. The internet was developed by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency to move classified data from one secret lab to the other. So something in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the labs there, would be moved to Los Alamos, and that would be moved to Brookhaven National Laboratories. What were they doing in these laboratories? Doing research on nuclear wars, because that was the big story then. It was developed with only one thing in mind: to make research more efficient. And when you get on the internet, all the protocols you get and all the cool stuff to get you around were developed by American scientists who were deeply involved in the Cold War. Now, you then have the cell phone, which most of you don't use anymore, because you irritate me by sending me text messages instead of picking up the phone. Okay. The cell phone was first deployed in 1985 by the United States Army and was used for the first time in Operation Desert War. And it was entirely invented to facilitate military communication. Bottom line is, there is nothing in this phone, or if you're a religious fanatic in the Android, there was nothing in this that was not created for war. So you think about war as a distant thing. You think about war as something that doesn't really have to do with you. And then you pick up this phone, and every bit of it is drenched in war, in fear of war, and everything else. Now, the Americans are peculiar. In the United States government, they're not allowed to have patents. Basic rule is, if the U.S. government invented it, and it's not secret, it's yours for the taking. It's an odd rule, but it works for us. It means that everything we do in preparing for wars, designing aircraft, everything else, ultimately comes down to being available. So Steve Jobs, who is so cool, invented nothing. He took other people's inventions from the government, put them together, and the only thing he invented was marketing. And that was pretty cool. Bill Gates invented nothing. MS-DOS was a program he bought from someone that had originally been developed for the Air Force. Zuckerberg invented even less. Your whole generation lives in a fantasy of creativity. The basic tools that guide your life, that permeate you, were developed by warriors or scientists of warriors. It got to you, and a bunch of really smart marketing guys put them together and convinced you they were geniuses.
So
the real
essentially,
geniuses made $50,000 a year.
Military grade technology brought to you by Edward Bernays. And so when he says, you know, you think about war as a distant thing, something that doesn't really have to do with you, and then you pick up this phone and every bit of it is drenched in war, in fear of war and everything else. So in all of that, you know, I mean, look around. Look at all of the technology. It's all. And so this is why, you know, like I said, not wanting this to be a Sunday morning kind of broadcast. I mean, if you're really understanding what he's talking about, really understanding what's going on all around us, and we'll play some more clips into the second hour, then you understand that 1 John 5:19 is a monumental understatement. We know that we are of God and that the whole world is in the power of the evil one. The whole world. Look at what the devil said to Jesus in the wilderness. I will give you all this. Jesus didn't say, it's not yours to give, buddy. So there was a usurpation, and the chain of command was sort of subverted and inverted, if you will. Or that was, you know, sought to be inverted, and here we are. But, you know, that's the whole point of this military-grade stuff, you know, and that's why I said not long ago, if we're really going to get down to brass tacks, then it's not necessarily this guy or that guy, because then how do you explain generational evil? How do these plans stick around? Why do we have all these corporations? And how is some obscure person, I mean, like the story of guys like Franz Kafka, for example, how does that even happen? Or, you know, any of the others, why, you know, to borrow again from Professor Paul H. Fry, why Marx? Why so much Marx? You may ask yourself, right? Frankfurt School of Critical Theory, Yale University. You may ask yourself out of idle curiosity, or perhaps even peevishly, why Marx? Why so much Marx? Why is it Marx? You know, and so you go back and you see this sort of unbroken thread. We talked about, you know, when Brian called in the other day, he mentioned Ken Kesey, and we didn't really get into that. James called right after that, and you know, I mentioned the Wikipedia entry for Kesey that mentions that he, you know, it makes it sound like it was accidentally part of MK Ultra. Oops. Volunteered to take part in what turned out to be a CIA financed study under the aegis of Project MK Ultra at Menlo Park. Project studied the effects of psychedelic drugs, particularly LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, cocaine, AMT, and DMT. And, you know, and then you kind of put two and two together and you go, wait, so, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, sometimes a great notion, et cetera. And basically these, you know, that's what that was. And then you look a little further, the whole Earth catalog, Stuart Brand, all those kinds of guys. And back from there, and you see this unbroken train of folks who are these types staring into the abyss on psychedelics and things like that. And it goes back. It's an unbroken thread back through the Theosophists, back through the Swedenborgians and Kabbalists and so on and so on. And that's why, you know, that's why it ends up being a Sunday morning thing, or sounding like it anyway, because that's what's going on. And I don't see any other plausible explanation for all of this wickedness and generational evil. I guess that's a fitting way to go out for the first hour. Second hour coming up. Go to the phones when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
John, I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.